Thank you. This person says that they are, I think they said that they are in South Carolina, and they're seeing no significant changes of Barbadian living there. Schools are now closed, so they're pretty sure that there will be a domino effect, but she asserts that she is a Bajan, she's Bajan born. So she says that oil, flour, and sugar, she can survive on bakes if push comes to shove. Down to brass tacks. Hello?
Hello, good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon.
Yeah. My mom used to say, so, you know, buy some oil, buy some rice, sugar, flour. Don't run into those things and you'll survive. You know, from way back when people were really poor, they baked any muffins and things. It helped keep us alive. I see some positives coming out of the situation. What I was just talking about, agriculture, there's one of the U.S., I think the senators I was listening to, he said that the United States made a mistake in outsourcing all their, much of their products and things in China and the Far East and so on. And even when India said they would not be sending out the medication or something, they're keeping it for their people, he said that the U.S. should be in a position where they wouldn't have to be depend on even all the medication that comes from the same India and China. So I'm thinking that this situation ought to teach us that what we can provide for our people. Now, I'm not only saying Barbados, whatever different countries can provide for their people, they should try to do so, rather than just bringing in everything from outside. Because when there's a situation like this, or worse, hurricane, whatever, then the people panic because they think of they're going to lack food. Most of the fear, I think, is about lack of food. We have shelter, but the fear comes from people thinking they will lack food, right? So the guy was making a good contribution there when he talking about agriculture. I mean, that's all cane and thing, but really things that we can produce for ourselves.
Well, thank you very much for your observations, your thoughts on this matter. One of the things that comes to my mind has a lot to do with, you see, this issue which came to the fore when President Trump became the leader of the United States, when he said America first, and he embarked on policies that were more what they call unilateral. I mean, even the recent decision to impose a ban on flights from 26 countries was unilateral in the sense that there was no discussion with the Europeans about it. He took that decision all on his own. And what we see here is a virus that begins in Wuhan, China. And then it shows you how interconnected everybody is. That at a very basic level, the world has changed so much that it runs completely contrary to the notion that you can pull in to the degree where you can isolate and insulate yourselves or yourself from the rest of the international community. I think it'd be interesting to see to what extent that either reinforces the view that you need to be more apart, or reinforces the view that you need to work together, because it is in working together that the world is now trying desperately to contain this virus. Because without that kind of cooperation, we are going to find that it is going to be difficult to keep it within certain boundaries. So I wait to see where that particular part of the discussion goes. Down to brass tacks. You on the air?
Yes, good afternoon, sir.
Yes, welcome.
Now, this message is not for you alone. It's for the entire diaspora of this nation that is listening right now. Now, I've called this program last week, and I've warned Mr. Wickham, and the police has decided to investigate in this.
Excuse me.
No, understand.
You just understand this. First of all, if you are the person who I think you are, if the police came to you, that's what they're supposed to do. I just want you all to realize that you can't come here on the radio and make threats against anybody, but especially the people who function here as moderators, and that we are going to sit down and take that lightly. At the end of the day, it is up to the specific moderator to decide what he or she will do when it comes to police action and that sort of thing. But once that person decides that that is what they want to do, they are going to get our fullest support in pursuing the matter. They also have our support in this regard, that we are not going to entertain you speaking on this program in those circumstances. So you're not coming back here to talk about that. You deal with that with the police, and if it ends up in court, that's where you will deal with that matter. But please, desist from coming back here with it. Down to brass tacks.
Hello, David.
Welcome.
Welcome. How are you?
I'm well, and you?
Yeah, just getting over a little orange. I just,
okay.
So I've been socially distancing myself for a while.
Okay.
What this thing shows, David, is that the world is but a global village. And you make it even a smaller village in tourism, and particularly so in the cruise line. The cruise line industry, it pulls you from all four corners of the earth, whether it is the staff or the tourists themselves. But I would like, first of all, to compliment you. And I'm not trying to flatter you. That is very easy to do. And the little programs that you've been doing to sensitize and to bring people up to date. Water, Mr. Ellis, is, I think, the main arsenal. It's the main weapon in the arsenal of fighting this virus. You've got to wash your hands. You've got to disinfect the surroundings. You can't use alcohol and all that. You know, you remember something called EC as a little boy going to school?
I remember it, yeah.
Yeah, you had to wash your hands in EC, which is a bleach solution. And it is strange that as we move up the social ladder, et cetera, you move away from those things. You move away from religion and faith. You move away from basic hygiene, washing your hands. Because you got the doctor there, you got the antibiotics. So all the basic things have been done away with. So I am saying that water, and I am calling on the authorities to make sure that all of those houses, those people, not because of the distribution network being faulty, but those households that have been unable to pay their bills, get the water back on in those houses. I remember a couple of years ago in England, they had something like a soft touch where they would reduce the volume flow of water. So just to remind you, what made showering difficult. I remember when one of the H1Ns, I don't remember which one it was, swiped through UK. They throw away that pollen. If you're on the road at certain hours, you would see people in this day and age, 2020, going to the few standpipes that are remaining, with each child having a shower bucket and a smaller container, which would probably be the one for drinking. Mr. Ellis, that has no part in our society. And speaking about a vaccine, I followed the whole Ebola thing right through. I followed it three times a day because it was an opportunity to bring yourself back in touch with the literature. And America had discovered that they were going wrong when they were not taking the people into their confidence. That was the actual word used. I've been saying now for a few weeks, for about two or three weeks.
Is it America?
Yeah, yeah. America. When you remember when the nurses had gone back home, or a nurse had gone back home and somebody else had fallen ill, when they had to fall it, they gave you blow-by-blow commentary. And they said, you have to bring the people into your confidence. I don't know if you remember the night when they went and picked up, it was one or two patients from the air base, and then take them out to where they were supposed to treat them, et cetera, et cetera.
But America wasn't the epicenter of the Ebola outbreak.
No,
so the issue of public confidence and stuff would
No. I'm talking now about people understanding what is going on.
Mm-hmm.
Don't mind if a fella can ask you a question. Don't mind if a fella asks you a question five times. I'm seeing it happen in developed countries. Don't tell people don't panic. Everybody has his or her own way of approaching things. So I'm saying this, if you take people into their into your confidence, they would in turn take you into their confidence. And you wouldn't have this proliferation of false news. But talking about vaccination, do you know that right now there is a trend, well, could I say a trend, is it strong enough? There is a growing interest in people not to have their children vaccinated against the MMR.
Yes.
And this is based on what you call them?
All sorts of theories. There's more,
more
than one.
It is called the anti-vax. The anti-vax.
The people who say, who argue that as far as they're concerned, that's a freedom that they ought to be able to exercise.
Yes.
And they don't want to surrender it to anybody.
Right. No. I also have a freedom to exercise that my child should not sit knowingly next to a child. Because look at the upswing in the measles virus. There was a definite upswing in the Northern Hemisphere over the last two summers. And if you want any greater correlation experimentally, if you want to use that word, there are two islands, Samoa and another one in the Pacific, where one country had taken it upon themselves to back off the MMR. And they have shown a noticeable rise in infection.
Yes.
Over.
So you're making
other.
That point to say what?
Right. So I am saying, here it is now. We are calling and clamoring for a vaccination. But we have a vaccination which we know has stood the test of time. And you're getting people losing interest in a vaccination.
Okay, we got to move on. Thank you very much. Down to brass tacks. Hello?
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
How are you keeping today?
I'm well, and you?
I'm back to bad today.
Mm-hmm.
Listen to me, you give that gentleman the right answer and the right message.
Well,
you know?
No, we can't. There are certain things
we can't do.
But don't, let's not prolong that. I mean,
we aren't prolonging it, but he know what he's there and they are still coming back.
We won't prolong that. I mean, at the moment, I mean, we've been very interested, yes, in what has been happening in Guyana and the recount, and the rest of the region really is very concerned about what is happening and what could potentially happen. Because if, at the end of it all, there is a perception that people are being denied the right to choose the government that they want, then if those people end up in the majority and they are denied that, then you know there are consequences associated with it. Guyana's problem has been going on for so long, and we understand the ethnic divide. But the ultimate goal really has got to be to find some kind of relationship between the two ethnic groups in that country that will allow some stability. I mean, with all that the country has right now, all that it has going for it, you know, it's unfortunate to see that they are apparently unable to get this kind of situation resolved. So I certainly hope that we will, you know, get out of what is now currently being pursued. CARICOM government's trying to see to what extent they can exert some influence in trying to bring about an improvement in the situation. that we will, you know, we will see something better. Now, you know, we spent a fair amount of time today talking about the challenges associated with COVID-19. Jamaica, there's this piece that says that Jamaica, the land of reggae music festivals, outdoor life and mass gatherings, could become a country under COVID-19 medical emergency for the next 3 to 5 months. And that is being said by that country's health minister. He's quoted as saying that it could effectively put a halt to a lot of activities in the country. Now, when he had spoken, at the time there were about 8 confirmed cases. It has now moved beyond that. But the ministry had been tracking at that time between 200 and 300 people who may have come in contact with the patients that had contracted the disease. Now, that dovetails with a story I saw this weekend which says that there's been concern here among the entertainers about how much they are suffering as a result of all the uncertainty. And rest assured, there are many organizations that are planning this and planning that, but they know full well that there's every possibility that those plans might have to be shelved because of the situation. So there are losses that people are likely to incur as a result of that kind of difficult situation that the country confronts. I'm told that the Prime Minister is likely to address the nation today. When we get all the specifics, certainly we would like to bring that information to you when the address actually occurs this evening or today. And we are keen to see or hear exactly what else she has in mind. I thought that the meeting that was held on Friday with the media suggested that some details still had to be worked out when it came to what kind of economic emergency plan Barbados could have as a result of, you know, the impact of this disease. And certainly I think the government is looking to get a little bit more time to work that out. But she knows full well that there's a need to communicate with the public of Barbados on the most important matters. And certainly when we look at the health minister on TV, and when we see his picture in the paper, we realize that he certainly is under pressure. I mean, you could appreciate that you come to office in 2018 with the difficult economic situation, you're stretched out trying to deal with that, and then comes this. So you can get no rest. And the same thing, they're like, I would think, those who are really on the front line of this type of matter, Prime Minister included, would be like caregivers. Is, you know, caregivers sometimes can't sleep at night. And there's a price you pay when you can't sleep at night, you know. You also have to take care of self. As a person who is leading people and having to go there and go to Guyana and meet this person and meet the next person, go on the cruise ships and all of that, you're vulnerable too. So in pursuit of the objective of trying to get the best for Barbados, your political leadership can also be exposed, and we should never lose sight of that either. Down to brass tacks.
Good afternoon, David.
Yes, good afternoon.
First thing, my prayers go out to all the people who are currently suffering from this pandemic. And this is obviously a historic moment in the life of the world. It's the same way that there was pre-9/11 and the things that happened post-9/11. This is what is going to happen with this situation now. We're going to be reflecting in the future as to how we used to live life before this pandemic and now how we're going to proceed to live life after. A couple of things which you were saying, and especially with respect to agriculture, which I keep hearing, I've heard other moderators, in particular Peter, speak about it, and his belief that, oh, why don't we stop thinking about deluding ourselves into believing that we can grow our own food and those sort of things, and why don't we just turn over the land, and why don't we just bring in all the food?
I don't agree with that, you know.
But this is where I want to get across.
I don't agree with that.
Because, right.
I don't think that we can produce all of our food. But I don't believe that we should surrender agriculture altogether. No, and in particular, very divided, Peter and I don't agree on this, as it relates to sugar in particular.
How do you relate to sugar?
Because I think that I've heard Peter express the view that you have articulated, particularly as it relates to the sugar industry. I haven't heard him say that agriculture across the board is something.
I have heard him say in terms of agriculture, in terms of or bringing in the things that we need to eat or in our food.
I think that's dangerous.
But for me, but just a second, hold on. I want to believe sugar is dead, and we should be gotten out of that in a long time. But and that we'll never totally abandon sugar because we have to use it for molasses and use it in the production of rum. And to say that Barbados, this is Bajan sugar, I think that is vital. So we need to have a strategy for that. And I believe that the Ministry of Agriculture is more or less pursuing those lines to some degree. Right? The idea of importing, of creating this massive amount of sugar for exportation, it will not make any money. So I'm not talking about sugar. But in terms of food production, you see, when people say we can't grow all of our own food, the challenge I have with that, a statement like that there, is that we can grow enough food for ourselves to eat. But in a lot of cases, we don't want to grow. It's just a matter of choices, okay? So if you want to eat, let's say rice, and you don't grow rice in your country, then you can't eat rice.
Look, right? You know full well that when you come to this whole area, it is also going to be caught up in the polemics of the haves, the have-nots, the whites, the blacks, you know, all of that comes into play. And to me, I suggest to you that's part of the big hindrance.
But I agree. But this is the challenge that we have to deal with. Instead of people saying we can't grow enough food, it is that we don't grow enough food. Okay? And there are reasons, there are choices that we have made. Choices that we have made socially. Choices in terms of attitude, cultural attitude, and also choices that have been driven by the business sector. Because it is far easier for a businessman with money in his pocket to say, okay, I'm going to bring in a container of whatever it is from Miami. I know I'm going to get the container on time, at X price, I'm going to be able to credit it, all sorts of different things that they can do with that there. As opposed to trying to rely on the activities of the farming community in Barbados. Okay? So therefore, you have government, you have business driving it, driving cultural taste in one particular direction and the decisions that are made. And then you have government supporting those there as well.
So what are the difficulties associated with being able to put more of the people who were not the previous leaders in agriculture in a stronger position to work in the sector, to develop the sector? Why is it that has not been possible over the years?
Because of the choices that people have made.
Who made those choices?
Look at the choices we have had with Pretty Larceny. No, in terms of the
Canada, just let me tell you, just hold on a minute. I just want to let you know that Canada is banning entry to non-residents, huh? Prime Minister Trudeau spoke a short while ago, this afternoon, banning. So one of the things that we see here from the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, as I look back at what he was saying, is that Canada is banning entry to non-residents.
Yeah, the world is shut down in that respect. But anyhow, in terms of the Pretty Larceny, a lot of people have gone out of agriculture because of the Predial Larceny issue. And the people who are supposed to make the legislation to increase the penalties for Predial Larceny have not done so.
Well,
okay? We need a
proper discussion about agriculture, because, you know, for every view one person expresses, there's always a counter perspective on what has happened. So you this situation now is just forcing to the forefront this whole idea of where are we. You now realize, yes, we've been saying it for a long time, but now we have a situation that really exposes our vulnerability.
Right, and we need now to respond to it in that respect.
Yes.
We now have to look at this as the opportunity. What do we have to do in terms of we're an island, so therefore we are technically able to more easily control our borders than anybody else. We should the ability of the educational system in the States to switch over onto technology, to switch onto online learning, those sort of things. We should be in this situation where our schools, if necessary, everybody has an internet connection or whatever, and a tablet, and then we could go to online learning. These sort of things that we now have to focus on and say, okay, this is what we have to do going forward.
All right, sir. We got to go. Thank you very much. One of the measures that the Canadians are requesting is that airlines will have also to screen people who are actually boarding their planes to go to Canada. Or to leave Canada, it seems. So we'll get more details on that as the day progresses. Down to brass tacks. Hello?
Is it Ellis?
Yes, welcome.
Hi. You made the comment about Canada closing its borders. That's really what I was calling about.
Mm-hmm.
And Barbados is in a peculiar position, a really unique position. And that's one where we can watch and we can actually see what's going on in other countries and the measures that they are taking. And here's my question. We are following guidelines not to restrict entry. But what are these larger countries doing? Are they aware of the same guidelines? Because the larger countries are taking steps to close their borders. And they're putting certain parameters in place so that they restrict certain things. They're making exceptions to a few things, but they're closing their borders to non-nationals. What are we doing?
What are the consequences of Barbados taking a similar posture? That's what you have to ask.
Yeah,
These are larger countries with more resources.
With their economies tanking too.
Right. But if you...
Are we going to look at money over health?
Boy.
All
I'm going to say to you on that is you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't.
It's true.
You are going to say that. But the minute that action is taken, then people start to feel the real pinch of that, you are going to hear somebody else with a completely different view. And this is a political decision that has to be taken, recognizing those realities. You also have to measure, where are you within the context of, let's say, Barbados has a trade surplus with the OECS. Barbados is already being slammed by what is happening in tourism. But if you add to that, I'm just giving you a possibility, possible angles, yeah? If you add to that a ban on that kind of movement between ourselves and the countries of the OECS, then it means that your insurance people and stuff, the kind of exchange of travel and stuff between us and them will also be impacted. So anybody making that decision has to calculate how much more you will lose by doing something like that. So I am one of the people who say to you, you heard me say it today, I think we should behave as if we had it here in the context of the kind of caution that we should be exercising, gatherings and that sort of thing. We don't have it so far, but all the indications are that it is not a question of if, it is a question of when. But how far can we go given our total vulnerability? That is the question.
I would say, though, Mr. Ellis, that I'm very impressed with Barbados's response from the health perspective, from the health sector.
Mm-hmm.
I think Barbados is one of the more prepared destinations health-wise because of all the measures that have been put in place. But I would still want people in authority to consider the Barbadian person or the working class person in every respect. We had an issue over the weekend of masks for security at the airport. It's not about how it looks. It's about protecting your health and your family. And that's the part that may be lost in all of the, as you say, politics and decision making to keep a country stable. An unhealthy country is not a stable country. And so we have to consider first the Barbadian, the person.
Well, I think
that's all I want to say.
I just want to say to you that I think that the discussion needs to be informed by an understanding of what are the full implications. So anybody taking that decision, if the government took that decision, it would have to then go further and explain why it took that against the arguments for remaining open, you know? Because,
mm-hmm.
I mean, when we finish here, it's a tough choice. Either way, it's a very tough choice. It is essentially, we're caught between a rock and a hard place right now. And there are going to be strong arguments presented on both sides. Okay?
Yeah. Have a good one.
Thank you. And the lady who called us from Canada earlier was proven right. This person says, I live in Canada, and they had persons who were part of the genesis of the virus in China. Canada has cases in the Toronto area and a couple of other provinces. And the person says that where they lived, they just got two cases in the last 2 weeks. And another says, I'm a bit concerned about the situation in Canada. My daughter is currently on holiday there, due to return to Barbados on March 25th. As this corona crisis expands, we will keep you informed, both in the news and outside of the news. I'm David Ellis, and I want to thank you for participating in today's edition of Down to Brass Tacks. Thanks to both Michelle Brathwaite and later on Dennis Johnson for supporting us here as well when it comes to the technical side of things. Do have a great afternoon.